Good morning. Okay, it's Easter Sunday, and let's just dip a little bit into the Easter story, and let's consider a couple of things. Let's look at a few of the people mentioned in the story, and maybe not the people that we normally look at, folk who aren't mentioned all that often. And let's also look at the timing of Easter, because the timing's important. So, a wee bit in the opening on the timing of Easter. And I had to look this up because I didn't know it, right? Easter is celebrated on the first Sunday following the full moon that occurs on or just after the spring equinox. There you go. Google is my friend, right? So, it's tied in with the Jewish Passover festival. And tying it into a yearly festival gives us a way to celebrate it once a year. And at least this lunar calendar thing has some justification in Jewish tradition. And it's not as much nonsense as celebrating Jesus' birth in December. Right? Just to be a wee bit radical, I'd suggest that the New Testament actually tends to encourage us to celebrate Jesus' birth, death, and resurrection every day of the year. That's not too radical, is it? Okay, let's review the Easter story. And let's consider what happened and when it happened. So, a wee bit before the actual Easter story, in Matthew 16, Jesus and his pals were in Caesarea Philippi, which is up to the north of Galilee, right? And here, Jesus asks his disciples an important question. So, Matthew 16, starting at verse 13. Jesus went to the territory near the town of Caesarea Philippi, where he asked his disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" "Some say John the Baptist," they answered. "Others say Elijah," while others say Jeremiah or some other prophet. "What about you?" he asked them. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." "Good for you, Simon, son of John," answered Jesus, "for this truth did not come to you from any human being, but it was given to you directly by my Father in heaven." It's just after this conversation that Jesus begins to talk to the 12 about what was going to happen when they went to Jerusalem. It's important that they had the idea that he was the Messiah before they went to Jerusalem, before Jesus told them about what was going to happen in Jerusalem. Before that conversation, some of the disciples were maybe not sure who Jesus was. The Jews had many holy men and prophets and even false prophets. This next bit that we're going to read, note two things. One, how Jesus makes it very clear what was coming. And also note how Peter reacts and how Jesus corrects him in a very forthright way. So, Matthew 16, 21. "From that time on, Jesus began to say plainly to his disciples, 'I must go to Jerusalem and suffer much from the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. I will be put to death, but 3 days later I will be raised to life.' Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. 'God forbid it, Lord,' he said. 'That must never happen to you.' Jesus turned around and said to Peter, "Get away from me, Satan. You're an obstacle in my way, because these thoughts of yours don't come from God, but from human nature." So, in the first story, Peter got the message about Jesus being the Messiah directly from God. And it's great that God is willing to give us thoughts and ideas in a very direct way. But Peter's reaction in the second story there, his reaction to the idea of Jesus' death is very different. His reaction came from his human nature. And we need to be careful to tell the difference between what God's saying and what our human nature's saying. So, sometime after that, the scene changes to when Jesus and his disciples got into the heart of Galilee. So we can probably assume that they had been traveling from the north and are heading to Jerusalem for the Passover, and it's been at least a few days since that conversation we were talking about. Matthew 17:22. When the disciples all came together in Galilee, Jesus said to them, "The Son of Man is about to be handed over to those who will kill him, but 3 days later he will be raised to life." The disciples became very sad. So once again, Jesus is telling his disciples about his upcoming death and resurrection. But once again, they haven't got the message. They just turn sad. They're not on the same page as Jesus is. Now, let's move quickly on and dip into the story when Jesus was clearly on his way to Jerusalem to celebrate Passover. On the road, he tells them again what's going to happen. Matthew 20 now, verse 17. As Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside and spoke to them privately as they walked along. "Listen," he told them, "we're going up to Jerusalem where the Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and then hand him over to the Gentiles, who will make fun of him, whip him, and crucify him. But 3 days later, he will be raised to life." So that Matthew 20 passage is the third time that Jesus clearly foretold his upcoming suffering. Let's take a wee aside and think how people react to Jesus. And boy, do some of the 12 disciples get it wrong, even the third time they've been told. What happens next is that the mother of James and John comes and asks a favour of Jesus, that her boys could sit on his right and left side. This makes me think about a mother's ambition. Has anybody ever felt their mother pushing them in a particular direction? Ever been nagged by your mother to do something or not to do something? Ever had her stick her nose into your business? And if I can maybe be slightly sexist for a minute, it's maybe different for sons than daughters. I'm not saying easier or harder, but different. So, young men like these disciples, have you ever wished your mother would not try to run your life? I guess I need to be very careful at looking at any of the mothers in the congregation today when I say this. But, of course, mothers do it for all the right reasons. And this mother was doing it for, in her mind, the right reason. But I think what we're seeing here is that This mother's understanding of the situation was remote, and it was wrong. And Jesus' answer to her was remarkably gentle. He said, "You don't know what you're asking for." How often can we misunderstand what God's saying? It does us good to remember that God sees things and thinks of things in a very different way than we do. We need to humbly ask him to give us his understanding. Okay, so that was Jesus for the third time talking to the 12 about what would happen to him. Let's look at what happened in that week or so before his death and resurrection. So, on this Sunday, Palm Sunday, right? Sunday, which was the 10th day of the Jewish month, we have Jesus actually entering Jerusalem with his band of followers. So this is Matthew 21, starting at verse 8. A large crowd of people spread their cloaks on the road while others cut branches from the trees and spread them on the ground. The crowds walking in front of Jesus and those walking behind began to shout, "Praise to David's son. God bless him who comes in the name of the Lord. Praise be to God." When Jesus entered Jerusalem, the whole city was thrown into uproar. "Who is he?" the people asked. "This is the prophet, Jesus, from Nazareth in Galilee," the crowds answered. So, here we've got a huge reaction from the crowd. They're welcoming Jesus as some sort of hero. Maybe they're thinking that he's there to overthrow the Roman occupying army. They hail him as a king. They have very high hopes of what he will do. But that's all about to change very quickly. Okay. I'm going to run through this very quickly, so stay with me here, right? The following are the headings in the book of Matthew about the events that happened over the next 7 days. The Passover was in the 14th of the Jewish month, so that was the Thursday. This is what's called Holy Week, right? And there's an awful lot in here, which is why I'm just reading out the headings. You could almost imagine this as watching the Easter story on fast forward, right? Monday, Jesus cleanses the temple. Tuesday, Jesus curses the fig tree, the authority of Jesus challenged, the parable of the two sons, the parable of the tents, the parable of the wedding feast, Sadducees ask about the resurrection, the great commandment, whose son is the Christ, 7 woes to the scribes and Pharisees, lament over Jerusalem. Wednesday, Jesus foretells the destruction of the temple, signs of the end of the age, the abomination of desolation, the coming of the Son of Man, the lesson of the fig tree, no one knows that day and hour, the parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the talents, the final judgment, the plot to kill Jesus, Jesus anointed at Bethany, Judas to betray Jesus. Thursday, the Passover with the disciples, institution of the Lord's Supper, Jesus foretells Peter's denial, Jesus prays in Gethsemane, betrayal and arrest of Jesus. Friday, Jesus before Caiaphas and the council, Peter denies Jesus, Jesus delivered to Pilate, Judas hangs himself, Jesus before Pilate, the crowd chooses Barabbas, Pilate delivers Jesus to be crucified, Jesus is mocked, the crucifixion, the death of Jesus, Jesus is buried. Saturday, the guard at the tomb. Sunday, the resurrection, the report of the guard, the Great Commission. Wow, that was quite a list, okay? That was just the headings. That week was hectic. It was epic. Even if we skip the headings that talk about the teaching that Jesus brought that week, even if we just look at the physical events of that week, It was huge. So let's look at just some of them. On the Monday, Jesus drives the traders out of the temple. Those who were using it for all the wrong reasons. I see that as Jesus setting out that God is not to be trifled with. We must take seriously the standards that God wants in the lives of his followers. God is a jealous God, and Jesus was making it clear that things were about to change. I also wonder if this shows something else. Jesus was using his God-given authority to do something that the temple priests should have done long ago, imposing God's rule in the temple. On the Tuesday, Jesus and the religious leaders begin to lock horns. And the story talks about the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the high priest. You can imagine them all as sort of long-bearded, oops. You can probably picture them as very religious types, right? And they begin to question the authority of Jesus. They try to trap him. Pharisees ask about paying taxes to Caesar. Then the Sadducees ask about the resurrection. Then both the Pharisees and Sadducees come together and ask, what is the greatest commandment? Jesus gives them answers that show his authority. And they slink away, beaten. In Matthew 23, Jesus gives the religious leaders a scathing rebuke. It probably couldn't be stronger. He starts off saying to the people, these scribes and the Pharisees administer the authority of Moses. So do whatever they tell you and follow it. But stop doing what they do because they do not do what they say. Then Jesus goes on to say, how terrible it will be for you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. And he says that seven times. And each time he points out different ways that they were doing things that were very wrong in God's eyes. The tirade that Jesus throws at these religious leaders shows the passion that he had, where he hated their hypocrisy. The hypocrisy of people who worked in the name of God but had none of the character of God. And near the end of this, he lashes at them with quite a stunning statement. You snakes, you children of serpents, how can you escape being condemned to hell? That's fierce condemnation. This isn't gentle Jesus meek and mild, right? Okay, on the Wednesday, the priests get together at Caiaphas' house, he was the head priest, and plot how to kill Jesus. At that time, Jesus had gone to the house of Simon, a leper, and there's probably a big story in that itself. And while Jesus was at that house, a woman anointed him with perfume. That's another wonderful story, a really touching story in itself. And it says the disciples became irritated because they saw that stuff with the perfume as a waste of money. And just at that point, Judas goes to see the high priest and offer his help in the plot against Jesus. Right, on the Thursday, we have Jesus sharing the Passover celebration with the 12. And no, that's what's referred to as the Lord's Supper, right? And just after this, Jesus foretells that Peter will deny him. And of course, big, bold Peter can't believe it. That evening, Jesus goes to Gethsemane to pray, and we have this odd story of the disciples falling asleep. How often do we miss the importance of particular events in God's story? And then, Jesus is arrested with a kiss from Judas. On the Friday, we have Jesus before Caiaphas, the high priest. We have Peter denying Jesus, the scene before Pilate, Pilate washing his hands, and the crowd choosing Barabbas to be released. Let's consider for a second the change in attitude of the crowd. On the Sunday, they had thought that this hero was about to come in and overthrow the Romans. But by Friday, Jesus is obviously not this great war leader that they were looking for. And maybe his teachings were actually a bit too hard for them. Maybe Jesus was asking them to do something that they weren't wanting. They didn't want to give up their sins. They didn't want to change their ways. They just wanted somebody to take away their problems. Okay, the Friday. I missed the big event, right? Also on the Friday, He's mocked. He's made to carry his cross to the place of the skull. And he's crucified. The world goes dark for 3 hours. Jesus gives up his life and is buried. Now, the Saturday was the Jewish Sabbath, so nothing happened. Well, not quite. What we've got is the priests set a guard on the cave where Jesus' body was buried. So once again, the priests are willing to bend their own rules when it suits them. Sunday, Easter Sunday. And there are only three of the headings that are used in Easter Sunday. The resurrection, the report of the guard, the Great Commission. And I think it's maybe worth reading almost the whole chapter that talks about the Sunday. That's Matthew 28. And we'll skip the bit on the report of the guard. Right? I'll let you off with that. And maybe it's worth reading this in the Passion Translation. It's just a different translation. And sometimes it's good to hear a familiar story in slightly different words. So, Matthew 28, starting at the beginning. After the Sabbath ended, at the first light of dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to take a look in the tomb. Suddenly the earth shook violently beneath their feet as the angel of the Lord Jehovah descended from heaven. Lightning flashed all around him, and his robe was dazzling white. The guards were stunned and terrified, lying motionless like dead men. Then the angel walked up to the tomb, rolled away the stone, and sat on top of it. The women were breathless and terrified until the angel said to them, "There's no reason to be afraid. I know you're here looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He has risen victoriously, just as he said. Come inside the tomb and see the place where our Lord was lying. Then run and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead. I give you his message. I am going ahead of you in Galilee, and you will see me there." They rushed quickly to tell his disciples, and their hearts were deep in wonder and filled with great joy. Along the way, Jesus suddenly appeared in front of them and said, "Rejoice!" They were so overwhelmed by seeing him that they bowed down and grasped his feet in adoring worship. Then Jesus said to them, "Throw off all your fears. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. They will find me there." Then, moving down to verse 16, "Meanwhile, the 11 disciples heard the wonderful news from the women and left for Galilee, to the mountain where Jesus had arranged to meet them. The moment they saw him, they worshipped him, but some still had lingering doubts. Then Jesus came close to them and said, 'All the authority of the universe has been given to me. Now go in my authority and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to faithfully follow all that I have commanded you. And never forget that I am with you every day, even to the completion of the age.'" Okay, that's the end of the book of Matthew. So we started the story today as Jesus and the 12 were together in Galilee in the north. And Jesus is telling them of his upcoming death and resurrection. And as we leave the story today, Jesus is meeting them again in Galilee, and he's very different. He is now in his kingdom. He has gone through that thing that only he could go through. He has broken the power of death. He has bought us freedom from sin and death. Over that period of a couple of weeks since they left Galilee, the world has been changed completely. Indeed, the whole universe of space and time has changed. Death is defeated. Evil has been conquered. The road to heaven has been opened for those who love him. Christ has risen. He has risen indeed. So, if we wrap up for today, there's maybe one quote in that last chapter of Matthew that's the central message for Christians from the whole Easter story. Such a simple little quote. Matthew 28:10. "Then Jesus said to them, 'Throw off all your fears.'" Thank you.